I'm delighted to welcome somebody we're very proud of, who is indeed vice chair of the Democratic Caucus in the House of Representatives, a prominent member of the powerful Ways and Means Committee, a Queen's boy, and somebody we've known for a long time. Good morning to you, Joe Crowley.
Thanks, Adrian. Great to be with you. Thank you, Kylie.
I know that this morning a mutual friend and somebody indeed who has had a tremendous influence for a long, long time on New York, good friend and supporter of yours, John Zuccotti, passed
mm-hmm.
away.
Yep.
And it's too bad. You know?
For people who had the opportunity to actually get to know John what a tremendous heart he had. I think, you know, as an Italian American, especially for the Irish, he was just a really generous person, and he will be missed. I think he's one of those. He became unfortunately more well known with the notion of Zuccotti Park and Occupy Wall Street, but he was such a bigger than life figure in New York City. Before that, for those of us who certainly had the opportunity to know him, and he will be missed, Adrian.
Yeah, well, long before you were born, he
mm-hmm.
was, of course, the deputy mayor under Abe Beam, and had tremendous influence before, during, and after the fiscal crisis for New York City, and indeed before and after 9/11 too.
That's right.
I think one of the reasons that we'd like to pay tribute to him is that there would not have been an Irish Hunger Memorial on that on the site in Battery Park City without the great work of John Zuccotti. So
no question about it.
God rest him.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, Joe and Congressman, about the Republicans and their very swift addressing of the refugee crisis from
mm-hmm.
Syria. I think we were all a bit shocked that they got together so quickly.
It was remarkable. I think, Adrian, first and foremost, we certainly, our hearts are with the people of France, and particularly of Paris, and
mm-hmm.
also of Lebanon, where there was a similar attack just prior to what happened in Paris, and what happened in Mali this week as well. It's an incredibly incredibly disruptive world we live in today, and I think this week is demonstrable of that. And I think the American people are concerned. Obviously, having come through 9/11 and understanding just how damaging an event like what happened in Paris can be, if it were to occur here as well. So I think we have to recognize the American people are concerned, are nervous, and to some degree are fearful of that happening. But I also think that we, as the leaders and members of Congress, need to be not as knee-jerk, I guess the phrase we're looking for. And what happened this week, I think, within 6 days of the events in Paris, it was one of the fastest moments on legislation I've ever seen in my 17 years in the House of Representatives, and I don't think it was one of the best moments for the House when they just a couple of days ago took the vote to pause the refugee program as it pertains to Syria and Iraq.
It doesn't. It's not surprising that, again, as you correctly pointed out, the knee-jerk reaction. However, it is not as if by blocking refugees suggested 10,000 into the United States, that will take care of the, you know, of the threat and many
right.
times the reality of ISIS and the constant threat that is worldwide.
In
hindsight, we could have expected that rather than jump on the the Trump Donald Trump bandwagon, that could take a little bit more compassion and time to sort it out. There was no need to do it so quickly.
Yeah, well, I think, Adrian, in terms of the real threats that we face, I think one has to look, and I don't have the answers in terms of this, but I think we need to reexamine the visa waiver program, for instance. And are there any flaws in that system that would allow for a wannabe terrorist to come to the United States to the visa program? The other thing that I think we failed to move on, I think we should have moved more quickly on, and that is closing the loophole that would allow a terrorist here in the United States to purchase, or someone who's a suspect on a terrorist watch list, has the right now to go into a gun shop in Virginia without a background check and purchase weapons. Those are more, I think, rational things that we ought to have addressed, but there wasn't the fortitude to do that in the same way that they tried to address the issue of Syrian refugees, who are, quite frankly, primarily women and children fleeing, programs and death and torture within their own land. And I think that's the sad part of what didn't happen this week.
Yeah. And without being partisan on this, the gun control issue is one that, again, is not going to go away. It's real. It's there. And, I think we need to point out that, okay, we can cry over spilled milk, but definitely with gun control, it's out of control. Excuse
right.
me, the pun.
No doubt. When you look at the tens of thousands of people each year who die from gun violence, it's pandemic, and we can talk, for the rest of this program just about that. But I do think when it comes specifically to the issue of terrorists and terrorism, the FBI does have a watch list. The FBI does have people that they're constantly observing. And if that list, for instance, could be used to at least to prevent them from getting their weapons so easily. Look, there's no foolproof program. There's no doubt about that. But I think there are some common sense steps that we could take to help prevent one of those attacks.
Now,
and I think that's one of them.
Yeah. In Congress, is that a prime issue, or is it one that is constantly being shoved onto the back burner?
I think when it comes to the issue of anything relating to curtailing the availability of getting a weapon, the NRA just puts the shutdown on it, and as they've done on this particular issue as well. And I think that's unfortunate. There's almost no rationale that's brought to the table from the NRA, and they control, a great majority of the Republicans and some Democrats. That you can't even bring this issue up. It's sacrosanct and cannot be touched. And I think that unfortunately, it will be addressed. You think it would be addressed after what happened in Connecticut, after what happened in Colorado and elsewhere. If a terrorist attack does happen and it's found out that terrorists obtained weapons here in the United States through legal means, there'll be an outcry. But God forbid, I don't want that to happen, and hopefully Congress can move as quickly to close that loophole as well.
Let me ask you also about, we're at the anniversary of President Obama's executive action on immigration reform.
Mm-hmm.
That also seems like something that has gone dead wrong. and the prospects, and you know, you as vice chair of the Democratic caucus, can you just give me, can you give us like an overview of where we're at, other than this being dead in the water?
Well, the president, as you know, Adrian, issued his executive order dealing with the parents, as well as we had already addressed the issue of people who are young children who were brought here at an early age, who weren't born here, but still were not American citizens. The president extended that to their parents, the DAPA executive order. And the Fifth Court ruled that they were going to suspend that until they reviewed it. Mr. Ryan, the new speaker, who I'm very friendly with, we were both elected back in 1998, has said that he and his caucus cannot trust the president. What brought us to this point, I would suggest, is that we haven't been able to trust them in terms of actually bringing a comprehensive immigration bill to the floor of the House. The Senate did its work and passed it, but the House failed to do so, and the president took executive order to keep families together, to stop immigration services from deporting the parents, in many cases, of American citizens, their children. And that has been held up in the courts right now because of the ruling of the Fifth Circuit. And I hope that they move swiftly. I hope that the Supreme Court takes the case up swiftly so that we can have clarity for these families and understand what their futures will be.
Nobody has been more involved than yourself and Richie Neal and others in Northern Ireland, and always on a positive input for what again we looked this week at the Northern Ireland Agreement. Can you first of all tell us what it actually means this time, considering that a lot of people are of the opinion, well, this is another, you know, kicking the can down the road, and we can expect that the Assembly in Northern Ireland will fall apart again, as it has a couple of times.
Well, I think it's a recognition on behalf of the British government that circumstances in north of Ireland are different from other parts of their government structure, given its history. And the imposition of the draconian cuts that they were facing was something that at least the Sinn Féin party and I think some other minor parties were not comfortable with. And in the end, the advancement of an additional $500 million dollars towards the economy of Northern Ireland to the government was something that was really done to help maintain the government within the north of Ireland as well. And I think overall, with the sign off of Sinn Féin, I think it was a win-win for both sides, quite frankly, for both the DUP and for Sinn Féin within the North. I think overall for Sinn Féin that they were able to compromise. It went to the nth hour, so to speak, the threat of actually of shutting down the government once again. But I think that has been moved at least through this year. And I think it is a year-by-year basis to see just what the needs are of the people there. And the decision that the British government, the Irish government, and the Northern Irish government will take up as these years go on. I mean, I think part of this is the normalization of government itself. So I think, from my view, it was a good thing that happened in the North this week.
It's also, maybe it gets lost somewhere, but we do have a very positive connection with Northern Ireland. I know somebody who you know very well too, in Senator Gary Hart, is and has been quietly involved, but very involved in dealing with the situation in Northern Ireland. I think sometimes we might forget that.
Right, right. I think that the interest of the United States through Senator Hart were demonstrated as well. I think we're all looking for a solution to this. And, you know, the politics of the North affects not only Great Britain, but it also affects Ireland as well. And so I think resolution here allows for calming of the water, so to speak, in many respects. Looking forward to the anniversary of 1916, the 100th anniversary next year. I think there's a lot of maybe some anxiety in terms of that as well, but I think also celebration of next year and maybe time to focus a little bit on that as well.
Which again, as I said, despite the anxiety and the it is a very significant, indeed, part of our history, and
no doubt.
And I think that Americans in general in the world, you know, will get a clear picture, and I think that the Irish government, indeed, is doing a good job in terms of making sure that this has turned out to be, you know, an exercise in rah-rah and, you know, again, that actually we have something very significant to be proud of.
Right.
100 years later.
And no doubt. And as you say, Adrian, it's not just on that side of the Atlantic, it's this side of the Atlantic as well that will join in that celebration and commemoration, looking back on the good, the bad, and the ugly, so to speak, but I think more good than bad and ugly, and I think something for all of us to be able to appreciate. I think 100 years and looking back gives us the opportunity to make observations about the good things that took place and some of the more difficult that I think we're moving in the right direction.
With all of emphasis, the massive coverage of Republican infighting and whatever, are there things in Congress in particular that are falling by the wayside because of the Republican debates and the constant bickering?
Well, I think that under John Boehner, and I liked John, I didn't have as close a personal relationship as I do with Paul Ryan, the new speaker. Paul was the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, which I've served on now for the last year, but we've served together for almost 10 years on that committee together. And we were elected the same year. Our families are around the same age, and both of Irish descent. And I do think that John Boehner found himself in a tough position in that he had at least 40 members of his caucus that wouldn't give him a sign off on much of anything, and everything came down to deadline politics and these false fiscal cliffs that really were not in the interest of the United States. There's enough going on in the world, as I've said, whether it's through famine or natural disaster as well as man-made disaster, to give anxiety, and now what's happening in Paris and elsewhere, a real anxiety to the American people. We don't need to further the anxiety of the American people by creating these false deadlines. We need to get down to business getting. If Northern Ireland can do it, we certainly can do it here in the United States and get the business and doing the people's business. And the politics will sort itself out, but we need to make sure we're doing the right thing by the American people.
Yes. And indeed, in terms of politics sorting itself out, there appears to be a lot of criticism, particularly post the Paris tragedy, that our president is lackluster and in fact not moving at the rate that is expected, and that in fact again the refugee crisis and all the rest of it seems to some, anyway, particularly those who don't like the president in the first place, that in world opinion, our president, may seem to be moving much slower, and indeed that the focus seems to be, you know, on Putin. And what's the reaction in the House and in Washington about that?
Well, I think to some degree we're all feeling the disadvantage of having the president out of the country during all this.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, the House worked within 6 days, all those 6 days to move on this legislation pertaining to the Syrian refugees, all those 6 days, the president was out of the country on a scheduled trip. In fact, was in Asia. We'll be back on tomorrow, on Sunday itself, or today on Sunday, I should say. And I think that has certainly muted the president's voice here. We're only getting snippets and sound bites. I think what's important for the president to do is to recognize what's happening in terms of the fear the American people are feeling and the concern that they're having for their French brothers and sisters who have gone through their 9/11 now, and recognize that those feelings are real, but also have to explain to the American people why it is we need to be smart about how we move forward. We don't want to give more insight for this to the radicals, those who are trying to indoctrinate young men and women into their form of Islam that is about violence and incredible brutal violence, the kind that we haven't seen in such a large scale since World War II in Nazi Germany. That's what Daesh is about. We ought not contribute to creating even more people like that. And I think that's what the president needs to speak to the American people about.
It will be, first of all, it'll be good that he'll be back, on terra firma here. But again, you can also understand, and I think people are more nervous after the tragedy in Paris. But we have to keep our eye on the ball, nevertheless.
Right. I think we have to be smart about how we move forward and how we address the issue of Daesh or ISIL within the region that they control right now. And that's not just the United States, but we cannot walk off the world stage here. The ocean that once protected us is no longer the protection it used to be. And we need to be engaged with the rest of the free world in addressing it. And I'd also suggest maybe it's a time for a reevaluation of our relations with Russia. They certainly have been stung now by Daesh and ISIL in the downing of their jet airliner. And, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, as the saying goes. And that may be the cause we have to look at this point in time, putting aside what will happen to Assad in Syria for the moment and focusing on our mutual enemy, which is ISIL or Daesh.
And it would be a good time to double back to the whole issue of gun control, because we are, the reality of the matter is that whereas we are, thank God, lucky on our side, but that incidents such as happened in Paris has not taken place here. But as you correctly point out, if anybody can just, meander into, without a background check, meander into a gun shop and walk out the door, there is something that needs to be done about that, and quickly.
I agree with you 100%. Will the Congress act as quickly as we did on this legislation? I doubt it. But my hope is that when we can take up these issues and really delve through them and close these loopholes, not only as it pertains to terrorists, but quite frankly to anyone who has a criminal background, who has some issues with mental health, that there's pause before they're allowed to purchase weapons within any gun shop or any gun show in the United States. I think that's the least we can do.
And the bottom line, of course, is that those who do pass a background check are very much entitled to own a gun. It's just that the manner in which we're handling it.
That's correct. I agree with that.
Congressman Joe Crowley, Vice Chair of the Democratic Caucus and a prominent member indeed of the powerful House Ways and Means Committee, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Adrian. Always great to be with you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving, by the way.
And happy Thanksgiving to you, too. Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.